You're very welcome back to Friday's 9 till noon show, 10 past 10 on this Friday, the 5th of December. Seamus Gunn is going to be joining us very shortly to answer all of your legal questions, or as many as of them that we can get through. But thank you for all the texts and calls that are coming through so far this morning. In relation to the new Donegal football jersey, a caller says, I find the price of these jerseys scandalous. At half the price, I would consider them dear. What do other people feel as it puts terrible pressure on parents? In relation to Israel not being or being in the Eurovision Song Contest and us, no fault, Eurovision has become a farce. It's not a song contest anymore. No real talent in it. Thank God it's not going to be shown by Ireland or RTE. Boycotting is seen as a strong and high-profile protest against the actions of the Israeli government, but it could all backfire on us as a nation. On to other topics here now. No one in a wheelchair can go down Letterkenny Main Street because it's inaccessible. It's all delay, delay, delay with everything in this country. And it's a bureaucratic nightmare trying to get through to any government or utility company. There's no plan at central government level at all, says that listener. Good man, Paul, you defend your party. Delusional party politician again. We are, he says. We are not believing you, says the listener. But Paul believes what he believes, and he's able to quote, you know, what he believes is Fianna Fáil's record. Greg, I watched the meeting, the Donegal County Council meeting yesterday. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael put a political spin on the budget. Voting to raise commercial rates is totally wrong, and the county hanging by a thread. I was talking to a councillor last night, and Kieran Brogan and his colleagues agreed €140,000 to €90,000 be spent to suspend traffic for 9 days and €50,000 for a traffic survey. Another waste of money to sit on a desk. Ask Paul Canning, how does he think this is right, that €140,000 of ratepayers' money in this county should be wasted on a traffic survey that's not going to make any difference, and a suspending of the traffic for 9 days at €10,000 a day? Well, who pays, though, the loss? You know, the loss to Letterkenny businesses may well be in excess of €10,000 a day. So, you know, they might say, well, it's a shame that it's costing the local authority that, but we as a collective are losing way more than that. They could make that argument. And, you know, maybe a survey is what's required. We've seen that the roadworks between the hospital roundabout and up where Highland Radio is, they change those plans on the hoof. You know, so maybe it would be no harm spend wise now and save big later is a possible scenario. Hi, Diggerman used to tender for council at €27 an hour. Now it all goes to Central Machinery Yard. That's €37 an hour. This is how money's spent. Another here, all talk from the government is about the infrastructure plan, most of which does not go above that Dublin-Galway line. If anything does, it takes decades to do anything. No Bonaghy Bridge, no Ballybuffet Bypass, and then they tinker around the edges that make traffic congestion worse. Mountaintop is RM50 at peak time. Greg, the whole country was wondering why Simon Harris jumped at the finance position. It was the golden ticket, says another listener. Now, we are running a competition which wraps up today, and it's in association with Cadbury Secret Santa, and we've teamed up with them as they have over 20,000 bars to give away this year. How do you do that? Well, there are posters scattered around the county. If you come across one of those, follow the instructions and you could give someone the gift of an anonymous chocolate bar just to say thank you. So to win our great prize today, which is a €250 one for all voucher for someone who nominates someone, and a €250 one for all voucher for the special person that's nominated, all we're asking you to do is say, who would you surprise with a Secret Santa bar and why? Why do they deserve it? What good reason do you have to surprise someone with one of these Cadbury Secret Santa bars? So get your suggestions in, your nominations in to us on 086 60 25,000. WhatsApp and text that number, 086 60 25,000. We already have four very worthy recipients in the hat. One further one will be chosen today, and then we have an overall winner then of effectively €500 in one-for-all vouchers split between a nominator and a nominee. So get into us right now, 086 60 25,000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And I just want to mention as well, if you don't mind, that this is the last working day effectively, whereby you can enter the draw and have plenty of time to do so and be in our 11 draws of Christmas. We have €1,000 to give away every working day from Monday. So €5,000 next week, €5,000 the following week. And then just before Christmas on this program, we'll be giving away a car worth in excess of €35,000. It's that beautiful Renault Symbioz worth, as I mentioned, over €35,000, full of great kit. So there are 11 draws, 10 of a grand, one for a car. If you want to be in all of those draws, the first draw taking place on Monday, now's the time to do it, right? Get in early, and then you can just sit back and see how you get on. Just to remind you, you don't have to answer a call in a certain amount of rings or answer it at all. Your name is associated with a ticket. That ticket is drawn, you win. And one other thing I wanted to mention. Yeah, the tickets are €15 each, or you can get 5 for 50. But please only play if you can spare it and have a bit of fun with your hard-earned money. How do you get your tickets? HighlandRadio.com. They're available there right now, safe and secure. If you prefer, though, you can give us a ring at the radio station, 074-91-25,000. Please don't leave it till Monday, because we could end up chock-a-block and backed up, and we don't want anyone missing out. So if you want to be in the draws, now is the time, 074-91-25,000. Or, in fact, you can call into the station, as many of you do, and deal exclusively in cash or play by card there. Right, so we are here at the beautiful Glendown Craft Shop here in Clonmany. It's a beautiful little spot, by the way, just off the road. Well worth coming to visit. We are going to be speaking to its owner, Anne, who is a wonderful host and has looked after us superbly so far. We're going to discuss some of the work that goes on here, some of the traditions that are kept alive here as well. But also we're going to be speaking more broadly about this Buy Donegal initiative. It's to increase awareness of really the fantastic products that are out there. There's some amazing diversity and quality of Donegal businesses, and it can be like where we are now, where you can get beautiful handmade crafted items, or it could be, as Paul Canning said, your local hairdresser, your local nail bar. It's just all about recognising these local businesses and supporting them, because what you get in return is high quality, great value products and an excellent customer service. So much coming up in relation to that whole Buy Donegal initiative. Okay, welcome back to the programme. Seamus Gunn is with me. Seamus, it's a good job Caroline isn't lying in a ditch somewhere waiting for you to answer the phone.
Gosh, really? Yeah, I thought we were tuned in here.
Tuned in. I was going to try and tell you how to switch off this new autofocus feature on Zoom, but you know what? It's not too bad at all. It's grand. You look pretty good.
Is it on now?
No, it's fine, but you'll notice if you move your head, the camera's following you, but it's all good. Seamus, how are you getting on? Welcome to the programme. Thanks for joining us.
This high-tech stuff's always ahead of us, you know? Yes. Look, I don't want any Christmas presents on that line now, you know? None of that sort of thing.
We'll keep it to...
too much for me, yeah.
Wheels and sticks. Listen, we've got loads of questions to get through, but interested to get your views really on and how one might frame it, the cost of peace in Ukraine. Hopefully we're at a point whereby this terrible bloodshed and loss of young lives can end. But, you know, there's a cost to everything.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody's a bit perplexed by it at this stage, Greg. It depends on what news medium you're actually tuned into or listening to. If you're taking leads from the US, you get a line on it. And then from Europe, which is obviously what we're more concerned about. I find it slightly extraordinary, really. We've all lived through different times and history, and people say history repeats itself. And here we are seeing it play out in front of our lives in relation to a situation that has arisen, which needn't have happened at all in my view. That's just my own opinion of it. We're going back to February 2022 with an aggressor moving in on a country that has its own independent sovereignty. And is now vying to take over in or around 20% of it. And it would seem that that could be part of a deal, or certainly a condition, an ingredient in a deal that might ultimately lead to peace. Now, we flip back to late 1930s, 38, 39, and at that point in time, you've seen the exact same happening. And people said it would never happen again. Neville Chamberlain came back from wherever, somewhere in Germany, Munich, I think it was, and they had an agreement reached which they thought they would then stall the Nazi movement, and Hitler in particular, by appeasing him in his move into what was then Czechoslovakia. They signed off on the Munich Agreement, and the great words of Chamberlain, "A peace for our time," has resounded ever since, and we know what happened next. So where is this any different? You know, what, like, in the terms of repetition and history, we are now going down that same road again. In 2016 or so, 2014, I think, or 16, Russia just moved into Crimea, took it over. Mm. We're allowed to continue on to some degree.
I just want to hold you there, for, if you don't mind, because you start at 2014, right? Was this inevitable? Was it that historically we'd go down the same route again? Because, you know, there were efforts by the Russians. They want to protect their land, their sovereignty, you know, their security. And they were saying, look, at you know, you're encroaching up against our border here. You know, you are flexing your muscles. These war games that were taking place in Ukraine, you know, Ukraine can't become a part of NATO. Fundamentally, a lot of what Russia will sign up to if there ever is a peace deal is precisely what they were seeking before this full-scale invasion began at all. So do you believe the West, in inverted commas, has to take any responsibility for this war beginning in the first place?
It's a fair question. If you go back, yes, of course we could go back before Crimea. If you go back to around 2014, the Donbass region has been fought. It's been fighting out there for 8 years preceding 2022. And they've now actually, I think, taken on over about maybe 80% of that at the minute. And that seems to be one of the key areas that Russia is homing in on with regard to annexing it completely. But if you're asking should Europe take some responsibility, well let's just tease that out. All Ukraine was trying to do in around that time as well was to join NATO to have some protection against this movement which was right on their doorstep by Russia, and Russia being the aggressor. How do we know that? Because they've done the same in Crimea, and when they took on Crimea, the rest of Europe looked on and allowed them to do that. It was Russia, in my opinion, who started to flex their muscles again on the Ukrainian frontier in or around the end of 2021, leading into 22. And by the way, Greg, they said and made it very clear that they had no intention. I remember being down in the country at the time listening to this, that they had no intention of invading Ukraine at all at that point in time,
for sure.
and made that clear to the world.
The only thing
and suddenly they were there.
The only thing is there are warmongers in the West. You know, there's no doubt that they are, and they make decisions. They make decisions that don't really necessarily take full account of the consequences, you know, and we've hitched our wagon to some of these, Ursula von der Leyen, for an example, and others that do seem to be warmongers. And you know what? I don't think it's a conspiracy theory to wonder a lot of these people that are pushing certain things in the United States and Europe, you know, if you were to follow the money, you know, you'd want to be absolutely sure no one benefits from this financially.
Well, if you go down that route and you see what was supposedly the snippets of this points of agreement or heads of terms that were suggested, yes, do follow the money, particularly follow the 300 billion assets that are frozen in Europe at present, which are Russian assets. Obviously, most of them most of them, interestingly enough, held in Belgium. Why that is, I don't know, but that's where...
Well, they don't want them, you see. They're concerned. They were trying to get them moved out because they don't want to be in the firing line of Russia down the line. So they actually sought, did they not, security guarantees to actually, you know, facilitate whatever the EU might plan for this money.
Well, you see, besides, Europe and the US are diametrically, it seems, opposed on this point. And it is also likely a stumbling block. Europe sees those funds as possibly for funds that could be used for reparations to rebuild Ukraine. I don't think that that's terribly unreasonable. I think it's worth teasing out that point. While on the other side, the US and the Russians see these funds as potential for investment in Russia by actually the US.
Yeah.
So they're two diametrically opposing views on that. So when you do follow the money, you can see that the US is thinking, well, here could be even a further opportunity to develop in Russia itself. But Europe won't be having that. So the great divide, and you say that there's warmongers in Europe. Well, I don't necessarily agree with you because they can't afford it, Greg. They don't have the defence. They don't have the systems there that could actually take on a full defence of the likes of Russia if they started to flex their muscles elsewhere, which seems to me to be likely to happen because the leopard doesn't usually change its spots. And while they're talking peace talks or while they're hinting at that they're interested, there's still, you know, there's still wreaking terror on Ukraine on a daily
basis.
They
are, and my concern
and
is too
that... Just on the humanitarian one, just before
of
I finish.
Course, yep.
And this is, because this is just in the small little print somewhere, you see, that children have been sent off to North Korea that have been taken in by Russians. And like what that's a crime again. The International Criminal Court a few years ago issued warrants against Putin and I think one of his commissioners in relation to that, which nobody seems to pass any reference to at all.
And no one seems to talk either to about the videos and images of people with additional needs being chained to benches in Ukraine either, which I have seen myself. But I do understand where you're coming from. One final point, though. We kind of maybe are a little bit naive sometimes, are we, as humans? There are cycles in humanity. We think we're so sophisticated and different, but you have war times, you've got peace times, you've got people always trying to grab somebody else's land. Are we ending peacetime? Are we part in this sort of a cyclical way, inevitably heading towards a major global conflict? Because that's what we do. That's what's in our DNA, and that's where we're going. It's a bit pessimistic, but curious as to your view.
It is pessimistic. Is it realistic? We have a tendency to self-destruct. The powers and the balance of powers, though, is what would concern me now, and the way they are aligning. And in fact, I believe that Europe, to some degree, are now second-class citizens on the world stage in that, because the big powers, China, Russia, the USA, they're on the other side, and they're paddling their own canoe here. And Europe is looking on. So naive, we have to aspire towards something better. Of course we have. But will we self-destruct? That's something that could happen.
Yeah, it's a deeper one. Thanks for that, Seamus. Seamus Gunn's going to be answering your legal questions after we come back after these messages. Yes, indeed. And it's a lovely shop here, I have to say. I haven't been here before, Clonmany. And any time we're in Inishowen, I do love it. But here at the craft shop in Glendone, and to celebrate by Donegal, Glendone Craft Shop's hosting a weaving demonstration and a pre-Christmas sale Friday the 5th. And Saturday the 6th of December, running from 10:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. And if that wasn't incentive enough, there's 20% off all Glendone garments. Some exclusions apply. And there's lots of other bargains available too. They do traditional proper weaving here. You will have seen it featured, and the person who's responsible, who I'll be speaking to, you'll have seen it featured on Nationwide. Of course, Donegal Tweed in the conversation at the moment, because it's going to be hopefully a protected product on an EU-wide level. So you get to really come to the coalface here. So that weaving demonstration from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. each day. So call in, stick it into your sat nav if you don't know where it is, and it will bring you right to the door. I'm in the company of our good friend and colleague Seamus Gunn, and we are going to take some of your questions now. Seamus, this is one that comes in from time to time, and you know what, it's one of those questions, when you answer it for this listener, I think you're going to answer it for a number of other listeners as well. And it's as old as time. My neighbour has planted a hedge that's blocking our view to the main road. We've had a few near misses. What can I do? Now, yeah. I've seen this before, where you get these lovely squared off hedges and you're trying to pull out, and because of the nature of the vehicle, the nose of the car literally has to be out before you can actually see around the sides of one of these squared off cornered hedges. What can you do?
Yeah, it's we've had this type of question before, but it's never the same, Greg. And this one is, there is a slight variation here, in that seems that the difficulty here is when exiting a property, there's a hedgerow that's blocking a view. Now, at the present, if you're applying for planning permission to develop a site, that's one of the points that would be looked at by the planning authority, that you would have vision sight lines, as they call them, on each side for exiting safely onto the road. Now, this could be a situation where it goes back preceding that. But usually then, in those type of situations, you would have an easement built into whatever, saying you were buying a site, and you would look for sight lines on each side so that you would be able to actually keep control of the hedges right and left, so that you have vision lines coming out, hence avoiding any danger exiting onto the public road. Obviously, this hasn't happened. Now, again, this is as old as Methuselah as well, but the first port of call here is dialogue. There's just no doubt about that. But it's not sometimes that common. But that's where to start. If a situation like this, and it's described to the neighbour next door as to the difficulties and the dangers that are arising and are apparent on a daily basis for the person that's using coming out onto the road, they may be very reasonable and deal with it, so you have no issue whatsoever. If that doesn't happen, yes, you're in a situation then where it becomes confrontational. And that's not ideal either, because you will remain neighbours probably at the end of this and going on for years to come. So it's best, if at all, it can be resolved in reasonable terms. If not, then what are the options going to be? In practical terms, I've seen this myself, not engineering terms, but in practical terms, you can get some type of a mirror device which would assist you for coming out and for exiting. But in legal terms, if you have a situation where you need work done to trees next door that are encroaching on your property, and you can't get any agreement on that, you could think of making an application to the district court for what's called a works order, in order to get permission to carry it out yourself if they're essential and necessary. That's possibly an option, but in that situation, I think that is more given towards where you have trees overgrowing onto another person's property, which this isn't really the case. This is a sightline case, so slightly different. They could consider, if it's creating a danger for road users, of which the individual is, well, then they could also contact the local authority to actually put the people on notice that this is causing a danger on the public road, and they could request them to trim them back appropriately. And if they don't, then the public authority could have the power then to do so themselves and make good any damage, of course. So those are a couple of real options. The district court route, just because it would polarise the parties into the future, I'm a bit reluctant. I do think that going right back to the start, dialogue really is the answer.
Can I ask a question?
And going forward with any of these, for anybody listening, going to get a site, see that you have easements to your right and your left for the purpose of maintaining sight lines.
I know this is anecdotal, but in your experience, by the time someone maybe makes an inquiry with you or with one of your colleagues, has dialogue on the ground taken place? Like, do people actually, in a way, trying to avoid confrontation or even conversation and skip a step? I'm just curious if many of these cases come across you and your colleagues' desks where the basics haven't been tried yet. Like, listen, I'm sorry, maybe you don't realize, but...
Yeah, no, it's a very telling point, actually, that, because I would, if answering it straight up, I would say no, that they haven't been properly explored.
Wow.
before they arrive at the desk here, and then it's discussed and you go through, and then where does it go from there? Let me just explain this to you. Well, if somebody's coming in with that situation, first of all, I'd have to establish the boundaries. And where the boundaries are at, and probably think about getting some type of an engineer or architect's report to show what is there any encroachment at all in the first instance. So you're immediately talking about maybe spending quite a good deal of money establishing A, that you have a case, and B, maybe that it is a nuisance, and then consider then going down the court route, which is going to cost, it's going to be significant enough. While the situation could be easily remedied by the people having a practical discussion on the ground, but unfortunately that doesn't always happen. And when you start going down the legal route, you are going to incur costs. You're going to be advised legally the way it's going to be handled, and if you're prepared for that, with the aggravation and the fallout afterwards, which I put a good bit of emphasis on, because I say life does go on after these cases.
It is, and people then can begin to make your life more difficult in things that aren't related to that line of sight, for an example. It doesn't necessarily draw a line under it. I might do a couple of will ones with you, Seamus, because you've been doing this long, long time with Sean before now, and you know how popular the will questions are. Our last parent has passed away, and we are a family of seven. Our eldest has announced that he and the next eldest will go to the reading of the will, and not all seven of us. The rest of us are unhappy with this. What's your legal advice? Thank you.
Yeah, well, the reading of the will, it's like an old-fashioned term. It's something that I haven't practiced in some time, actually, where you're dealing with an entire family, because it'll be my view that the relevant parties involved in relation to the will are the executors of the will. So they're the individual or individuals, regardless of how many. They're the people who are charged with the responsibility of carrying out the wishes of the deceased in accordance with the terms of the arrangements in the will. So they're the party that should attend with the lawyer, with the solicitor, to find out what's in the will, the contents of it, and what steps are to be taken. And then it's up to the executor then to pass that on to those who have an interest in it, i.e. the beneficiaries. So, but situations like these are fluid. There's a lot of emotion involved, and have to be dealt with very sensitively. And if family members, maybe including the executors, wanted to attend for the reading of the arrangements, then of course that can be facilitated. But sometimes there are personalities, and there's difficulties. And, in this situation where there's the loss of a loved one, things can overflow and they can become tricky. So you just have to be quite careful and deal with it in a sensitive, an objective way. But the executors, I think, are the ones who are the fall people, the middle people that are in charge. And those are the ones that have to give instructions ultimately, not those that are beneficiaries.
All right. So I think our last question might be even trickier. Both of our parents are deceased. Five siblings left. One of the siblings has expressed to be buried in the same grave as the parents, but the other four siblings would be against it. Where do the four siblings stand on this matter?
That's a terrific question. It might be the last question of the year, actually, Greg, but it is, yeah. It's something that should be considered very carefully before people fall out about it. They have obviously different views, and you have to really go back to not what is their wishes or desires or whatever agendas they may or may not have, but the people, the two parents who have been interred in a grave, And as to what their wishes would be. So let's just reverse it completely and say that that's what has to be looked at here. And in that situation, I would be saying that the people to be consulted are there if they had made wills, their legal personal representatives or their executors, and put it to them and ask them what their decision would be in relation to it, because that's is the prerogative of those that have passed away.
But they're dead now.
And therefore it's falling within their estate, not the children coming thereafter to make these decisions. Also, I think it would be very well worth checking out what the situation is with regard to, people say, well, they own that grave. Well, in my opinion, they've just a right to be interred in it, like what would be considered in legal terms some type of an easement. But it'd be worth checking with what the procedures are in their diocesan rules that are relevant to it, which they're very well could be, and I think that's a port of call as well.
Okay.
But the actual burial right, and then saying that siblings can impose this on others, I don't think that is a very constructive way to be looking at it. I think that they should be pulling back from it and saying, what would the personal representatives, the executors of those that are interred in it, what would they want? What would their decision be? And take it down the succession route and maybe that way deflect and avoid some of the emotion in it, because it does sound like one that could get very, and you will use the word tricky, I'll use the word difficult.
Yes, okay, so that's it. The last question of 2025 answered. The last question of on the Nigel Noon Show, actually, because next year it's the Greg Hughes Show. So you're coming back, of course. We couldn't do it without you, Seamus. Have a wonderful Christmas. Love to you and all of your family and all your work colleagues, because you are of McLaughlin, Gunn, Slisters and Letterkenny. And we're talking about by Donegal, right? And those services include those of Slisters. And you're online as well, aren't you? You've pretty much nailed every URL with the word gun in it.
I wouldn't say that, but we're there, Greg, primarily to help people and, to give them a guidance and give them a direction. It's wonderful to see you up in the beautiful Clonmany up in Inishowen now today. And at this point, I suppose it'd be remiss not to wish everybody a very happy, peaceful, very safe Christmas, prosperous New Year, of course, a new show, and very best of luck with that, like from the Greg Hughes Show. Now, so there's changes afoot, and I think that for Highland Radio, continue what you do best, being the voice of the community, in the community, for the community. And don't forget gun.ie.
Seamus, chat to you soon. We might get a beverage over Christmas or something. Let's see. Right, we'll be back with our focus very firmly on By Donegal and our hosts here, the Glendowen Craft Shop, after this break and from here to 12 to mark By Donegal. We are joined by two people very much part of that ecosystem, that infrastructure. We'll start with saying good morning to Orla O'Hagan from Olivier Accessories. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing good. Tell us about Olivier Accessories. Where are you based? What do you do?
Well, my name's Orla. I own Olivier Accessories. We're based in Buncrana, and we make sustainable handmade accessories, all from remnant leather, so it's leather that's left over from production from bigger companies. So we get a lot of our leather from the likes of Rolls-Royce, Mulberry and BMW, so it's really, really good quality leather. And actually last year we got a large lump of leather from Mulberry and Dr. Martens, so we've got like really, really extremely high quality leather, and we hand make then handbags in Buncrana. And
And whilst we were all sort of, to some extent, and maybe you were in what you were doing, you know, grinding to a halt through the pandemic, this was the period where you had the space really to go full hilt at this.
Yeah, well, I was working in London up until 2020. I was designing luxury shoes and handbags for a luxury designer over there. And then with the pandemic, I got made redundant. So I was made redundant at 23, and I remember at the time thinking like, oh my God, who gets made redundant at 23? Mm. Like, what am I going to do? So I came home, and at the time lockdown was for 2 weeks. So I thought, oh, I'll go home for 2 weeks and then I'll start applying for jobs back in London. And when I came home, sure, lockdown ended up going kind of longer and longer, and I was getting bored, and I'm like a really, really creative person. So I had a sewing machine that I bought for my lecture a few years before, and I just started to make like wee bits and pieces, like wallets and really small things. And then once lockdown kind of started to open up again and people were going to weddings and stuff, like it was still like limited numbers, like 50 people, but because obviously nobody was going anywhere, everyone did have a wee bit more money to kind of spend. So they were coming and going, oh, I would love a like bespoke handbag to match my shoes or my dress. And then I was kind of getting custom orders, and then I started to sell online. I was in Michael Honey's, and then once I got a website, it all just kind of kicked off from there, and I stopped applying for jobs in London, and I thought, right, I'll give it a go. So we're 5 years in now.
I know you probably don't want to sit in your ivory tower and judge others, right? But there definitely is a problem with fast fashion, and a lot of us are sort of complicit in that. You know, T-shirts for $2.99, and it's fantastic. I think it's fantastic for those who can't afford stuff, and it makes stuff accessible. But there is a broader issue of just sometimes like T-shirts, polo necks, dresses that are coming in, you know, on a conveyor belt or in a boat from China. You wear them once and you chuck them out, and they end up in a pile or in a river somewhere in Africa a lot of the time as well, right? So as someone in the fashion industry, do you look at elements of it and go, we really need to be doing better, but I'm going to do my bit?
Well, I think when I started doing this, I knew a contact, like from working in London, I knew a contact that dealt with like end of line stuff that was going to either be destroyed if you didn't use it. So I had a good contact there, and I thought, right, okay, if I'm going to give it a go, I'm going to do it as sustainably as I can. And I think though, in the sustainable fashion element, like a lot of it starts from home. So like if you're buying gifts for people, and if you're trying to shop locally, like why is these big fashion retailers selling as much as they are? And it is probably because, you know, in your local area, people aren't making and doing as much as they can. So I think now, like going forward, hopefully people with the Buy Donegal campaign, hopefully people can, you know, look around their local area, who's making what. And, you know, people are trying to make a living out of doing this, and people are so passionate about it. So I think now, even going forward for Christmas, like buying a gift in your local area and keeping the money locally is such a huge part of it.
But you're also offering quality, uniqueness, and a story that if you are environmentally minded, it can work well. You can work that with pride. I'm going to speak to John Hina, who's a master weaver, but I can't rush it because we're right up against an ad break. So I want to put the last question to you, Orla, and then come back to John if John will facilitate me there. How big do you want to be, right? You know, because yours is one of those brands, isn't it, whereby there might be more value in having one-off pieces or a dozen of them rather than 2,000 of them. I don't know. What's your business plan in that regard in terms of scale?
Well, actually, in terms of scale, I was flat out for the past 5 years, and then I had a baby this year.
Okay, congratulations.
So I haven't actually really worked for the summer. So now I'm trying to get back into the swing of it.
I'll wait till January. There's no panic on you.
Having a plan for next year. But going forward, I think, well, we deal with such small skins, so everything is quite limited. So if you buy one, it might be one of three or one of 10. Yeah. Like it would never be more than one of 10.
And after that, it's not unique any longer, is it? Because you're going on to the next piece of material that you have. Where can people find out more information about what you do?
We are on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook at Orla Vera Accessories. And our website is www.orlavieraaccessories.com.
You don't need to actually say that anymore.
Orlavieraaccessories.com.
Okay, listen, well done. Thanks so much for coming down to us, and continued success. Congratulations.
Are doing hosting tomorrow in O'Flaherty's in Muncrana, a market, and it's supporting the Buy Donegal campaign. We've got really, really good vendors coming in. It's on from 12 to 7 tomorrow, and it's a massive drive home for the shop local. So if anybody would like to call down, it's on from 12 to 7.
And where again?
In O'Flaherty's Bar in Muncrana.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you so much for calling in. Back with the news after these.